Hello and welcome to In Focus. I'm Anthony Moreno. Joining us for part two of our conversation is County Manager Fernando Macias. Mr. Macias, thank you so much for sticking around.
Thank you.
And discussing issues about the county. Now, we talked last conversation about infrastructure within the county and some issues there. One of the other issues, the top issue that you brought up and many people obviously know, is public safety. I'd like to talk with you a little bit about that. Since you took over in January, what are some of the things that the county is doing right now to ensure that people in the county are safe?
Well, I believe that, as I mentioned in the earlier segment, recently there's been a real effort to try to stabilize the workforce or the deputies and their command staff. Historically, the county has suffered from a substantial turnover. So you have new law enforcement officers or new deputies coming into the job. They get trained there for 3 to 5 years, developing all of their skills, but then had a tendency to leave the county to the city of Las Cruces, other law enforcement agencies that paid better. And so there has been an effort to try to bring the compensation levels for deputies and the command staff to a level that is very competitive in the market. And we're certainly hoping that that is going to stabilize the turnover among deputies, and so that you have a greater number of them available to be patrolling out in the county and providing a greater degree of security within the communities in Doñana County.
How are things looking right now? I know you mentioned there are some folks going through training and things like that. Right now, is the county still looking at, you know, a deficit in regards to law enforcement officers on the streets?
Well, there's always going to be a turnover, but what I believe I'm pleased about is that the waiting period to bring candidates into law enforcement with the county has diminished. It's happening at a quicker pace. So if there are vacancies, we're able to fill them faster than we have in the past. The compensation is more attractive now, so it's helping to stabilize the number of deputies that we have. And with those vacancies that occur, they get filled faster.
One of the things that is involved with public safety is folks being able to contact emergency officials should they encounter a public safety issue or emergency issue. I know in a special election in years past, the county voted to, you know, enhance that system. Is the system in place where it needs to be, in your opinion? And what can folks understand what's really happening as far as the county dispatch system?
Right. And again, it's commonly referred to as MIRVDA. And it's in a brand new facility with very modern equipment, very updated equipment. I'm aware that they have a very good training program for the operators. So I believe that although you'll hear a story here or there how difficult it was, even now with on a cell phone, even if the individual can't speak, but they've been able to dial the 911, they don't have to give an address anymore. They can just identify where the individual is, basically by the phone being off either the receiver or the cell phone being operative. So from my perspective, although again I've been here in this position only for about 5 months now, and so the meetings that I've attended, I believe, are very professionally run. All of the different stakeholders, both law enforcement, fire, all of them are at the table having these kind of discussions to ensure that we have the most responsive dispatch system.
How often do those meetings take place?
On a monthly basis.
Okay, and that involves, you know, law enforcement agencies within the county, local communities, government officials as well.
Yes.
One of the things
and
that...
Not just Doñana County and the city of Las Cruces, but Mesilla, Sunland Park, all of the municipalities have a role in ensuring the best service available.
One of the things that was recently reported in local news outlets was that the Doñana County Sheriff's Office forwarded over 500 cases to U.S. Customs and Border Protection, border enforcement, immigration enforcement between 2016 and 2017. You know, when news like that breaks in a border county that we live in, do you have some concerns that people who may be a part of an immigrant family may think twice before contacting authorities should they encounter an emergency or be a witness to a crime?
Well, I believe that an initial report of certain activity occurring doesn't have that broad effect from my experience. Because while I was a district court judge for those 11 years, there were many cases where the alleged victim was someone who did not have their citizenship. So I do believe the argument can be made that that is a disincentive to reaching out to law enforcement, but I haven't seen that on a consistent basis in my experience, and I believe that I have the ability to have that broader view. You know, if there is a crime that's being committed, there may be some issue in terms of reaching out to Border Patrol, but there isn't an issue reaching out to the deputies because systemically and across the board, they are not making a direct inquiry as to the citizenship of the individual.
You mentioned earlier about participation in county community groups, getting feedback and being part of the county government. If somebody is part of an immigrant family, and yeah, news like this does break, do you think they might think twice about joining some of those groups?
Joining advocacy groups?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm assuming that many non-citizens are part of advocacy groups in order to...
We're talking county community groups to get feedback with, like, infrastructure that you mentioned in our last conversation.
Well, we certainly have the program that you're talking about is the Stone Garden. It's a grant that funds deputies for overtime work. If you read the grant agreement, it has nothing to do with immigration. It has to do with basically drug trafficking. That's the major emphasis of that. And certainly protecting the borders in terms of methamphetamine, cocaine, all of these kind of drugs that do cross the border outside of the port of entries, then I'm not sure that anybody has a concern about that particular activity. It's that they're complementing or interacting with the Border Patrol at the same time. Because at the point that you identify someone who's crossing illegally, you don't know what the purpose is. You just don't. You don't know if they're carrying drugs or if they're coming over here to find a job. You don't know the difference. But in terms of what the efforts are to identify whether there is a violation of state law, from what I've been able to review and discuss with the law enforcement officers, their primary focus is to intercept drugs coming into the United States.
I'd like to, you know, talk a little bit about your communication with the sheriff's office. How often do you meet with Sheriff Vigil, and how often do you guys communicate on public safety within the county?
Well, I believe that there is, and it shouldn't be just singled out to the sheriff, it's all of the elected officials. I have an open door policy. So anytime they want to meet with me, regardless of who the elected official is, the opportunity is readily available to them. So I don't want it just to focus on one elected official. Our responses to the county commission is very routine, very quickly. We're constantly engaged with them, and we're going through a period where we're developing our budget for the entire county. So of course, there's a great deal of communication with the sheriff's office, with his staff, with the clerk's office, the treasurer's office, all of the elected officials within the county structure.
Earlier this year, the county undersheriff was fired due to an investigation that involved a harassment scandal. People in the community in the county have criticized the sheriff on how long it took him to really make a decision to handle the incident. He was quoted in an interview with nmpolitics.net that an outside group was assigned to outside firm and was assigned to investigate this, and that he also consulted with the county manager, you, and the county attorney. How involved were you in this investigation?
Well, in the investigation, I wasn't involved at all because that was prior to the commencement of my tenure. So I didn't have any interaction whatsoever. My interaction was After the conclusions were made within the investigations in terms of discussing what it meant from even a legal perspective, as well as the process that would have to be used in terms of suspending or terminating any employee.
Who was the outside investigations firm that handled this investigation? Do you know?
Forgive me, I do not remember the name. It was not a law firm, it was a private investigation firm.
How involved was the county human resources in this investigation or the whole process?
As I mentioned earlier, the investigation occurred prior to my tenure, so I'm unable to address that issue. I do not know the interaction. But if you hire a private investigator, that's their purpose, to do the investigation and to prepare a report once they've reached certain conclusions.
You know, I bring this up because you were quoted in the Sun News when you took the position that, you know, you wanted to not just focus on leadership, but moral leadership within the county. Over the last few years, the county has faced multiple scandals, with obviously most recently the sheriff's department, the county commission, and also the county treasurer's office. What are some of the steps that you've taken so far to ensure that taxpayers and residents in the county can know that things are kind of getting turned around as far as policy goes within the county?
Well, first of all, you set a personal example. This is a key position that basically has the administrative oversight over all of the county. As we hire our new employees, we put them through orientation in terms of the responsibility, the price that is paid for a lapse in ethics or a violation of the laws of New Mexico. So there are always those consequences. So we're trying to orient the workforce to make sure that we can diminish the incidences that have occurred, that there is a better understanding, that there is a level of confidence that, because before you make certain decisions, you consult with the county's management and legal staff so that you understand the consequences of the decisions that you're being made. Can we control everyone's individual behavior? Well, no. I don't think that any government can ever accomplish that. It doesn't matter what the institution is, there is going to be these lapses in moral judgment. That's unfortunate. We are trying very aggressively, though, through training, orientation, to try to diminish that to the greatest degree possible. And I'm talking about training our elected officials as well.
Okay. We have a couple of minutes left, and I want to talk about a major issue within the county, the County Detention Center and Behavioral Health.
Yes.
One of the things that I was involved with last year was an investigation into behavioral health here in southern New Mexico. And through a records request, KRWG was able to find that at the Doña Inés County Detention Center in 2016, there were over 11,000 inmates booked into the county detention center. During that same time, over 56,700 instances took place where inmates required behavioral health services. Substance abuse services were required over 10,400 times. You know, during this time, there's a county triage center that sits vacant. Where are we with this triage center as far as being up and being operational to where we can perhaps address this issue of behavioral health within the county?
Right. First of all, let me suggest to you that those statistics have to be analyzed with a greater degree of insight into the problem. Part of the problem is having inmates who are dealing with serious mental health illnesses. Those individuals, we've been able to begin a process of early identification so that we can work with those individuals. When you use these statistics, they also include individuals that are facing serious charges, that because they are incarcerated, because they are away from their families, are dealing with depression, with other kinds of issues. And certainly we have nearly $6 million contract with a service provider for both medical and mental health related issues. Let me be real blunt. They built the triage center in the wrong location. where you find the majority of individuals that are dealing with serious mental health issues are around Camp Hope, up El Paseo. The best location for a triage crisis center would have been in that general area. So what we're planning to do right now, and we're looking at different options, our mental health providers in the detention center are in a jail pod. A doctor for his office has a jail cell. So we're planning to retrofit, I'm planning to recommend that we retrofit the what we've referred to as the crisis triage center into a facility that will house our mental health staffing, and so that the treatment of the individuals who are in custody and in all likelihood will not leave custody until they've completed their legal process because of the severity of the charge that they're facing, they will be treated in that facility. We'll be able to open up another pod. We'll be able to handle a higher level of individuals that have been incarcerated. We are trying to a great degree, and I'm very familiar with a process that will work, to move people through the judicial process faster so that they're not staying as long as they historically have within the detention center. It is a great priority. There are a number of different components that have to be addressed and planned, but we hope to be coming forward with a broader proposal within the next few months.
Well, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I do want to thank you for joining us for this two-part conversation. Thank you so much, County Manager Fernando Macias, for joining us on InFocus.
Thank you very, very much as well.
And we want to thank you for joining us. I'm Anthony Moreno.